your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. Presented by Progressive Insurance, I'm Jason Fitz. We start the hour with headlines, as we do every single day. We now know, in a world where we've become obsessed with The Last Dance and everything it gives us and the peek behind the curtain of the end of the Chicago Bulls dynasty, we've now been made aware that Kobe Bryant also documented his final NBA season with an all-access film crew. Much like Jordan and the Bulls did, Kobe Bryant went in and allowed a crew to follow him anywhere and everywhere through his last year with the Los Angeles Lakers. Sources close to the matter told ESPN that the footage has been in the editing stages for a potential documentary to be released years from now, though it's unclear when exactly that would be, and that Bryant had seen edited material and provided feedback in the months leading up to his passing. It's unlikely those plans have changed, so we don't know what the status of it is moving forward, but we do know that that unprecedented access that we've seen with The Last Dance might also exist as we continue to look forward and look back, I should say, on Kobe Bryant and his last year with the Lakers. Other news you need to know all revolves around the NFL draft. Joe Burrow, the first pick overall in the draft, no shock there. The beginning of the draft went much as planned. If you'd written a mock draft months ago, you would have gotten a lot of it right. Joe Burrow, first overall to the Bengals. Chase Young, second overall to the Redskins. Jeffrey Okuda, the corner out of Ohio State, third overall to the Detroit Lions. Tua Tagovailoa, I tried to call him Marquez Tuiasosopo. You can tell I got the Raiders on the line, on the brain. Tua Tagovailoa went to the Miami Dolphins. Justin Herbert to the Los Angeles Chargers. One of the big surprises, though, the end of the first round, where the Green Bay Packers traded their way up to take Jordan Love and begin their succession plan at some point, possibly, for Aaron Rodgers. Those are the headlines you need. First, take your take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. We start with some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. I want the Straight Talk from you. Which player drafted last night will have the biggest impact next season? Not long-term, but short-term. Who's going to have the biggest impact next season? Dennis in Montana, give me your take on this. Who do you love coming out of the draft that's going to have the biggest impact right away?
Awesome. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. To me, I think the biggest impact is someone that's playing every down, and they're not fun to talk about, but an offensive lineman. It was Becton out of Louisville going to the Jets. He's going to open holes and protect. I'm kind of jealous being a Chargers fan watching that last night with my brothers, and I was really hoping for an offensive line. That's a big guy, and I think they got a real good steal, and he's going to be very impactful this coming season.
You mentioned big guy, and one of the concerns on Mekhi Becton is exactly how big can get, because we all know that he can get absolutely huge. But if you saw the videos last night during the draft coverage, incredible to see some of the athleticism and the absolute just massive man that Mekhi Becton is. And you're right, never fun to talk about linemen. To be real, I think it's one of the toughest positions for most of us to break down and figure out who's good and who's not. So it gets a lot less attention. But I'll continue to go back to Mike Golic Jr. that I've worked with so much that studies linemen really, really big, really high on Mekhi Becton. So looks like that's going to be a great one. Alan in Chicago, what do you got as the rookie that you think will have the biggest impact next season?
All right, buddy. I'm not just kissing the cheeks, but I think it's going to be Ruggs. And here's why. I think that Isaiah Simmons was the best steal of the draft, but if you're looking for direct impact, you can't look for a skill player that was chosen by an offensive guru who had the choice out of any receiver he wanted. And when you saw that they wanted Antonio, they told you last year that the Raiders wanted a receiver to come in and make an impact. They lost Brown. They know Carr needs help. They could choose any receiver they wanted. They're not going to pick Ruggs and then not use him. With his speed, trust me, he's going to make an impact. In the long term, we'll talk different. You're talking about next year? Ruggs is the guy. Trust me, you could work on his route running. Everything else, the speed, the jumping ability, that's just going to decrease with every single player. But you could work on his flaws in a way that you can't work with the other flaws of the other receivers. So congratulations. You got the best receiver in the draft. You might not realize it till about maybe 2022, depending on how things go. But he's a good kid, and I think the Raiders did good.
Well, thanks, and love the call, love the take on it. It's going to be interesting because, as you pointed out, Mike Mayock and John Gruden had their choice of any of the wide receivers. They chose Henry Ruggs. Two picks later, the Denver Broncos took Jerry Jeudy. So they're going to be reminded a couple of times a year on whether or not they got this one right. There's going to be a lot of analysis on those two teammates as we see who becomes the better pro, and it will be constantly reminded if Jerry Jeudy turns out to be epic and Ruggs does not. The Raiders will be constantly reminded that they had the opportunity with their pick of whoever they possibly wanted. I want your take, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Which player drafted last night will have the biggest impact right away next season? Not long-term, right away. In the meantime, there's another portion of this conversation, and that's the conversation about who had the worst first day of the draft. It's always a difficult conversation because, as I've said so many times, the draft is the season of hope. Sometimes, though, it's the season of heartbreak. So, Max and Stephen A. had their debate on which team had the worst first day of the draft.
Well, let me just say, Packers, that's a head scratcher. Here's the problem. The answer is the Packers, because Jordan Love now has to make the Hall of Fame to make this a smart pick. If he's just a good quarterback, you don't need to burn a first-round pick on a good quarterback who's not going to play for at least the next two seasons, unless it's just injury insurance, knock wood, you know? So two seasons of development. And by the way, you got to pay him a pretty penny to be a backup even now, because it's a first-round pick. That slot is not just like signing someone like Dak Prescott in the fourth round, right? So you got to spend a little money for a developmental guy for at least two seasons. What if Aaron Rodgers gets used to LaFleur and actually has a much better season than he had last year? We've seen quarterbacks play into their late 30s and even early 40s nowadays. What if Rodgers, instead of regressing, progresses a little? It's not, you know, when a guy falls back like that with a first-year head coach, it's not unusual for him to take two steps forward the following season. It's not unheard of. Even in his mid-30s, in fact, often in their mid-30s, quarterbacks we've seen do it. So then what? Rodgers has another 2 years on that deal. Probably you want those 2 years. Or do you think you just let him go because Jordan Love is going to replace him, even if Rodgers is producing at Hall of Fame levels? Well, even if you do that, the clock is already ticking on Jordan Love. So if it works out and Jordan Love is a great quarterback, your window to win a Super Bowl on that rookie deal is cut in half immediately. So this only makes sense if the Packers looked at Jordan Love and said, him, he is going to be a great one. Not a good one. It's not okay to be good enough. No, he's got to be Hall of Fame. If that happens, then I'm wrong and they're right. And it's nothing against Jordan Love. He's very talented, and I wish him the best, and hopefully he proves me wrong. But the odds that any prospect winds up in the Hall of Fame are remote. Any of them, even Joe Burrow and Tua, who were the presumptive number one and two picks at the position. It's just not very likely that any... So the fact that a guy who's considered developmental, like a project, late in the... just the odds aren't with you. Meantime, you just won 13 games! Get Rodgers some help now. Got to make the Hall of Fame for this to be a good pick.
Well, I completely agree with you on the Green Bay Packers pick. There's nothing to add there, although I'm going to pick the New York Giants. And it's interesting that you mentioned the 13 games that the Green Bay Packers won last year. Your New York Giants have won 11 games in the last 3 years. Think about that for a second here. And so you're the New York Giants. Here you are, 11 games in 3 years. Okay. Obviously, defense is an issue. You rank 30th overall defensively, 28th against the pass, and you pass up on Isaiah Simmons out of Clemson, who can play linebacker, safety, corner. He can do it all. When you ask him what he is, he's a football player and was clearly recognized as the elite talent in the draft, maybe with people debating whether or not Chase Young, who's taken at number two, could be that guy. But that was about it. That's number one. Number two, and more importantly, even if you decide to stick with offense with Andrew Thomas, which is what you did, draft an offensive tackle out of Georgia, Jedrick Willis Jr. out of Alabama was projected as being better. I don't know that position. I'm just going by what the aficionados say. I'm not wishing anything bad about Andrew Thomas. Great story. Wish him nothing but the best. Looking forward to seeing him in big blue uniform. But in the end, there was somebody that was projected better than him coming out of Alabama in Jedrick Willis Jr. So you wonder why they didn't take him. Then you've got this kid, Mekhi Becton, out of Louisville that the Jets took. And you saw the highlights of him just rolling over people. Just a monster of a man. Those two guys actually looked better on film from what I could see than Andrew Thomas. So I'm looking at that as well. The combination of those, the fact that you can point to one, arguably two, that were better, a better selection than Andrew Thomas. And you combine that with the fact that you passed up on Isaiah Thomas along the way. Then you take into account the history of Dave Gettleman. It leaves huge question marks, particularly when you, if you're looking to take care of Saquon Barkley, then you got to make sure you get the best guy at offensive tackle. And if you're going to go the defensive route, you know what? Excuse me, the best player, arguably the best player in the draft, you passed up.
Yeah.
That's some straight talk. Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. As Max and Stephen A. debate some of what they thought was the worst of day one of the NFL draft. Now, so much of this conversation has been around negativity towards the Packers' decision to draft Jordan Love. It was a shocking moment for any of us that were covering the draft in any way and for everybody that was watching it. So I want to get some insight from it from somebody that's in the thick of it. So Mark Tauscher joins us from Wild and Tausch, which you can check out 9 to noon central on 100.5 ESPN Madison and 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. Mark, I appreciate your time. You know this organization so incredibly well. So what was your reaction to the pick?
I was shocked. And I know we, you know, there was kind of reports that this was, you know, Green Bay really liked him. And you know what? Okay, cut out. We're getting a little interruption here. You looked at it and you thought that they liked him. And yes, that'd be the case. But Aaron Rodgers still has a bunch of guaranteed money on his contract and is still playing at a high level. And I think everybody, you know, from a fan standpoint, was looking, boy, this team was in the NFC Championship game. And one or two playmakers away, can that make a difference? So I respect the fact that Brian Gutekunst, general manager, had the conviction to make this move because it's never easy to kind of plan for the future. But I think there's, you know, you have to make sure you get it right because now the clock is ticking on Aaron Rodgers' tenure here in Green Bay.
Well, with that being said, I mean, that's, Mark, one of the smart things that I think a lot of people are looking at is saying, should they have got more weapons? Does the depth of this draft allow them a little bit more freedom in your mind to address some of the other needs later and take that quarterback still now?
Yeah, I think, you know what, in listening to the post, kind of the post-draft press conference from Brian, is there was nobody that they had rated as high. Obviously, there was a run on wide receivers. You had Dallas take one, Philadelphia, Minnesota, and the guys that Green Bay really felt comfortable or wanting, they didn't feel the value was there, so they felt this was their best player on the board and was really deserving of a first-round pick. And I think there's no doubt, looking at today, both in the second and third round, Green Bay's going to address that spot. And with the depth at that position, you feel like you're still going to get great value, but you don't want to reach for somebody. And the last thing you want to do is, you know, reach for somebody, grab them at 30 if you could get them at 60 or 62, and you want to make sure you stick true to your board. And they felt really strongly, and the coaching staff and the general manager, they really liked this kid from Utah State. Didn't want to lose him, gave up a fourth-round pick to make sure they got him, and now here he is. And that was just kind of set everything ablaze, and especially in Wisconsin and Packer fans, there is a lot of question marks about what that decision means.
It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're talking to Mark Tauscher, host of Wildy and Tausch, which you can check out on ESPN Madison and ESPN Milwaukee. So, Mark, when you think about the relationship, because so much has been made about Aaron Rodgers and the relationship with the previous coaching regime, now you have a new coach in Matt LaFleur. They're 1 year in, and you sort of have him hitching his wagon to another quarterback. What does that do to the relationship between coach and quarterback in this situation?
Now, that is the great question. I think that's what everybody is curious about, because you know, everybody's trying to make a comparison to 2005, and this was Aaron Rodgers, the same situation. I think it's a lot different in the fact that Aaron has made he has not made any remarks that he was thinking about retirement. Matter of fact, he said the opposite. He wants to play into his 40s. So it is going to come down to, you know, there's no doubt Aaron, I don't think, is pleased about the decision to not grab a weapon and to bring in his replacement this year. I think he figured in the near future it was going to happen. Well, the future is now. So now I think it's going to be, Aaron has always played with a chip on his shoulder. They threw a boulder on it last night, and now his clock is, he's going to have to continue to play at a high level to kind of fend off the young kid from coming in and taking it. I think he's a professional enough. He understands the business. That doesn't mean he has to like it, and I think the relationship is definitely going to be tested a lot more than it was last year. But Aaron is still a hyper-competitive player. He wants to win, and he wants to prove. I think he's going to want to prove not only to all the doubters outside, now he's going to view guys doubting him inside that locker room, because when you make a move like that last night, make no mistake, there's doubt as far as how much longer Aaron Rodgers is going to play, because otherwise you don't use a first-round pick on a quarterback.
Mark, how much longer do you think he can play?
I think, you know, just looking at his contract, I think you feel really comfortable about 2 years, but I don't see the same drop-off that, you know, some people are seeing. Is he the same, you know, with mobility that he was 4 or 5 years ago? No. But his accuracy, the lack of interceptions, his completion percentage, he still is an elite quarterback, and I think this is going to do nothing but motivate him. I still think he has 5, 6 years left in him. I just don't think those are all going to be in Green Bay.
We're talking to Mark Tauscher. That's a strong statement, Mark. On First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio, I'm Jason Fitz. And, you know, I feel like last year we forget how good this Packers team was. I mean, they were 13-3. Come on. Like, they just don't seem to get the same level of love. Now we have the NFC getting a glow up all across the board. So next year going into the season, where do the Packers sit in the hierarchy of the NFC to you?
Well, there's still a long, I mean, I know everybody gets enamored with the first round, and I get it. It's because that's where you're looking for the biggest impact player. But you need to hit on some picks here, second, third round. And I think Green Bay's defense got markedly better last year and should be better this year. Offensively, I do think they're lacking a few weapons, but they have, you know, one of the best wide receivers, one of the best quarterbacks, a really good offensive line, and a running back by committee, but with Aaron Jones leading the charge, that is very dynamic. And another year in a system with Matt LaFleur, I think that this team is going to be right there. I think you look at San Fran, New Orleans, and Green Bay as kind of the three teams, and I know everybody's jumping on Tampa's bandwagon. We shall see how that plays out, but right now I'd say San Francisco, they deserve it. They're building through the draft again and putting two weapons in place last night. Green Bay, if all goes right, their draft pick last night will not see the field next year. And that's got to leave some questions. But I still think Green Bay is right there and will be a favorite to win the North and be one of the contenders, you know, in the playoff push for the to get back to a Super Bowl.
Follow him on Twitter at MarkTauscher65. That's where you can get to him. Plus, check out Wilde and Tausch on ESPN Madison, ESPN Milwaukee. I'm telling you, when all this pandemic stuff ends, Mark, we're going to go to the Calderon Club dinners on me. It's my favorite restaurant in the country. I always love giving them some love. Mark, we appreciate your time.
You bet. Thanks, Jason.
Seriously, the best Italian food you'll ever have is at the Calderon Club in Milwaukee. I know it sounds weird, but it's epic. Great breakdown from Mark, and as he said there, and I think it's really important, you know, he thinks Aaron Rodgers has years left. They just won't all be in Green Bay. We have to accept at some point the clock is now ticking on a Brady-like scenario that's going to lead us, or in this case, a Favre-like scenario that's going to lead that's going to leave Aaron Rodgers playing the end of his career somewhere else. That's now in motion and just needs to be acknowledged. When it comes to insurance, don't forget State Farm's a real deal with over 19,000 local agents and an award-winning mobile app. You can get the help you need when you need it. Find an agent or get a quote at statefarm.com. Let's take some of your take. I want you guys to tell me which player drafted last night will have the biggest impact next season. Eric in Washington, who do you got?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Well, this is an easy question. It's Clyde Edwards-Helaire. How in the heck did he fall to number 32? You might as well call the Tiffany Company right now and engrave Super Bowl 55 trophy to the Kansas City Chiefs. They're bringing back their whole entire squad and this guy. That's just unbelievable to me.
Oh, Eric, you're not wrong about that. I mean, 20 of 22 starters come back on a team that just won the Super Bowl, and you get one of the more elusive and explosive running backs and playmakers, let's say, out of the draft. You got to feel good about it right now. Steven in Utah, who do you have as the player drafted last night you think will have the biggest impact next season?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I honestly think Javon Kinlaw, the 49ers, that's my team. They traded away DeForest Buckner to get the 13th pick. We got Javon Kinlaw. It's going to be a plug-and-play. Put him with Bosa, D4, Eric Armstead, and we bring back every single person on defense. Hey, there's nothing to worry about for the 49ers.
You know what? You're not wrong about that. I mean, strengths get better. We just said it for the Chiefs. They add a playmaker to one of their biggest strengths. They get better. Well, the 49ers did the same thing. They add another playmaker and proof of concept. They draft well on the defensive line. So when they draft somebody, it holds weight for me. I mean, I look at that and I say, that means something. Matt in Ohio, who do you have as the player drafted last night you think will have the biggest impact next season?
Hey, Fitz, thanks for taking my call. So, being a Dolphins fan, I know it's not Tua. I think we're a year away there, but I think it's the Cowboys with CeeDee Lamb. Last year, they had Cooper and Gallup, who both went over 1,000 yards. Now they have a three-headed monster. They had a 14th rush attack last year, but now with another receiver like CeeDee Lamb who can really stretch the defense out, I think Zeke's going to have a monster year, and that's just going to make them even better offensively. So, kind of piggybacking off the last caller, their strength got stronger.
Yeah, well, and you're so right about the Zeke portion of it. Look, the question is biggest impact, not biggest stats. Thanks for your take on it, because you're right. Like CeeDee Lamb, I'm not saying CeeDee's going to turn around and put up 1,000 yards. He might not in that offense. What we know is that you're not going to be able to cover all of them and stack the box to stop Zeke. So I think Zeke's going to go off this fall, knowing that there's extra weapons there that they're going to have to account for. So biggest impact means total offense to me in that situation. CeeDee Lamb, a great, not good, a great pickup for the Cowboys where they're sitting. Well, I want more of your take on who you think drafted last night will have the biggest impact next season. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Plus, coming up, the Dolphins got Tua. They didn't even really have to tank to get him. We'll talk about what the Dolphins did in the first round last night. We'll do all of that next. Take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz, presented by Progressive Insurance. Got a lot of draft going on this weekend, but then you can put the cherry on top of the sundae on Sunday by tuning in to The Last Dance, a behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Bulls dynasty. The series continues Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN if you want the naughty words, ESPN2 if you want the clean version. And listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. I love everything about that podcast because Jalen and Jacoby have so much insight to everything that was going on there. So a really cool opportunity to get a little bit extra by listening to the podcast. Be sure you get out there. So I've been asking you which player drafted last night will have the biggest impact next season. We'll get back to your take in just a second. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. But one of those players drafted that we had all eyes on was Tua Tagovailoa. Now, Tua heads to Miami where he becomes a Dolphin. And there was a lot of speculation leading up to the draft where the Dolphins thinking of going in a different direction, where they're going to trade up for an offensive lineman. I mean, we got a Snoop level of smoke on this thing. I'm just saying there was smoke everywhere. I'm not sure what was real or what wasn't. So I want to get some insight on what went down yesterday from somebody in the thick of it. ESPN Dolphins reporter Cameron Wolf joins us now. Cameron, I appreciate your time. So was there in your mind a real question about Tua and the Dolphins?
I think that for everyone else there was, I think everybody was coughing over the smoke that you mentioned. There was so much of it. But I think for the Dolphins, they really centered in on Tua once it became clear that a trade up for Joe Burrow wasn't happening. I think he was always their guy. And I think all the other smoke was to prevent another team from trading up ahead of them to get their guy.
You mentioned the trade speculation, and we heard in reports that the Dolphins reached out multiple times to the Bengals. So what does it say about their sort of belief in Tua that they were trying to trade up to take Burrow instead?
Yeah, I think it's something where they really like both quarterbacks. I think Joe Burrow obviously was healthy, and, you know, I think that probably made him the quarterback one on their board. But I don't think it means anything less for Tua. I think they felt like they had to make the attempt, but it became clear quickly that since he wasn't trading that pick, and then they put all their attention on Tua. He's been their guy for a very long time. They felt comfortable with everything they found in him. And, you know, once they figured out they could have him at five, they were ecstatic.
So walk me through your process then as you're watching the Dolphins. We're talking to Cameron Wolf, ESPN Dolphins reporter on First Take Your Take. And they picked Tua, and now we know that they've still got two picks remaining in the draft. This is a team that spent $131 million at the beginning of free agency. They've upgraded across the board. So what was your mindset going into those last two picks on where you thought they needed to go?
Well, I mean, the interesting portion was whether them not trading up for Tua really helped them be able to use all of those picks and really not give up any capital. You know, I was told they actually never made an offer to Detroit or New York for that 3 or number 4 spot. So once it fell that way, they could go along their board and target an offensive lineman. And I actually projected Austin Jackson, the guy they took at 18, to them. He made a lot of sense. They liked him throughout. And I think that was a player where they felt, you know, upside, he can develop alongside Tua and go along. So it was a really busy day for me, but I think once 18 happened and I saw the way it flew, it kind of made sense to me the way their draft was going.
What did you like about Austin Jackson specifically?
I think his story is incredible. I know a lot of it was on the broadcast. He ended up saving his sister's life by donating bone marrow to her. And because of that, he didn't play great this past year. He got knocked because of that. He's got to get stronger, but he's 20 years old. He's extremely athletic, quick feet. He's got pure left tackle talent. He was a 5-star, you know, prospect coming out of high school. I think he's a guy that, you know, you're probably not going to be playing a lot in year one, but by year two and year three, the hope is you're going to be able to have a really good left tackle. So I think that was the plan there, and, you know, I think they did a good job landing him.
We're talking to Cameron Wolf, ESPN Dolphins reporter on First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. So then we get to the third and final pick of the first round, and I was doing some digital work with Dominique Foxworth and Mina Kimes, Mike Olick Jr., and Harry Douglas, Field Yates. As we were sitting there waiting for that pick, we kept saying, hey, it's got to be secondary, right? So that everybody's mindset kept going to, they're going to bring somebody in that's a secondary member. I'm not even going to try and say Noah's last name because I'll butcher it. You know that about me. So what did they like there for him specifically?
Oh, a big anogeny. I believe is how you say it. He was actually a little bit of a surprise to me at corner because they spent a lot of money on Byron Jones this offseason free agency. And now they have Byron Jones, Xavier Howard, Noah, and Nick Needham, a guy they're really high on. I thought they may have gone safety there, but they clearly valued his press corner ability. He's a guy who only has played corner for 2 years at Auburn, but he, you know, is a son of two Olympians, Nigerian Olympians. He's extremely fast, you know, really good leaping ability, and he's physical. He's a Brian Flores type dude, gets in your face, smash mouth type dude. So I think he's a perfect fit in what they want to do with that defense. So although it caught me by surprise a little bit that they went that route, once they made the pick, it absolutely made sense why he would be, you know, a player they targeted.
I mean, here's the real question. I'll give Field Yates credits for this. You're covering the team. How the heck are you going to put his last name and Tagovailoa's last name both in any tweets? I mean, you don't stand a chance.
Oh, man, it's going to be torture. You know, I can't imagine if I have to do a TV hit and both of them are involved in some sort of way. It's going to be rough. I got to get my practicing on now with both of those last names. So the Dolphins definitely didn't make it easy on us. Hopefully they're good enough players that it won't matter.
So Cameron Wolf is who we're talking to, ESPN Dolphins reporter. What do you expect from the Dolphins today?
Yeah, they had 3 picks. They have one at 39 and 56 in the second round, and then one at 70. I think that running back's a position we should look at. You know, most of the top backs are still on the board. DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins. I'd expect them to maybe target one on one of their second round picks. Cam Akers is also a name that I think they like. And then from there, they have to get some help in the front seven, whether that's a defensive end or outside linebacker, pass rusher. So I think those are two positions that you can kind of key on for them and make them expect them to make a splash there.
You guys can follow him on Twitter, at Cameron Wolf, and you say those names, and I'm stunned by how many great impact offensive players are still left going into the second round, man. This is going to be fun. Appreciate your time, Cameron. Really, just stop flaunting all of the beach scenes around you. I mean, every time you're on TV, all I see is sand and water, my friend. Like, I am so jealous.
Hey, man, I got to live the Miami life and show everybody how it is.
Be safe, my friend. Follow him on Twitter, at Cameron Wolf. We appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on with us.
All right, thanks, Jason.
Make sure you guys check out the All In Challenge, by the way. I've told you a lot about it. I want to tell you again, it's a fundraising effort for coronavirus crisis relief. 100%, every single dollar of what's raised will benefit charitable organizations focusing on providing food to those in need, particularly kids, the elderly, and frontline workers. You can check it all out, allinchallenge.com. There's all types of once-in-a-lifetime experiences you can either bid on or enter to win. Some experiences include a catered suite at the NHL Winter Classic, and you get to meet the players and get a tour of the locker room. You could throw out the first pitch at the next World Series. You can appear on the cover of Sports Illustrated. There's so much out there. If you get out there and you see some of the auction items, I know a lot of them are expensive, and maybe not everybody can participate in those. But even if you can't, you can go to the enter to win section. It's just like a raffle. You can buy raffle tickets and enter to win some incredible experiences I can't even imagine. You can enter to win like a raffle to be in a Scorsese movie with De Niro and DiCaprio. Come on. There's so much out there. 100% of the money raised by the All In Challenge will benefit organizations providing food to those in need. If you want to participate, if you can participate, every dollar of it helps. If you want to learn more about how you can help these organizations, go to allinchallenge.com. I'm all in with you guys trying to find out what player drafted last night you think will have the biggest impact next season. Who do you love that you think is going to come in and crush it right away? Sean in Iowa, who do you got?
Commiserations on that last pick of the Oakland Raiders. I'm sure you're still in a bewilderment there. But, hey, I know my pick isn't going to be sexy, but I believe that based on the situation that Tristan Wirfs having to protect the GOAT is going to be the biggest impact player. I think that he's going to be in the spotlight. I think he's going to go into a position where he's going to have to react and be viable day one. So he's my pick.
That's a great pick in general. There was a real split on which offensive lineman was going to be the best out of the top of this class. But I will tell you that I think Wirfs goes to probably the most ideal situation in the sense that he's going to be on a stacked roster with a lot of experience and some people that can help him. I mean, Tom Brady is going to help him immensely from day one. So everything about that is something to love. If you're a Bucs fan, you know, you go boring at this point in the draft and you shore up whatever Brady needs. Kenny in New Jersey, who do you think has the quickest impact next season?
Chase Young.
Chase, why Chase?
Wow. You see what Nick Bosa did? You see what his brother's done? I mean, they say he's a once-in-a-generation type player. And I'm curious, let me ask you something. Which five teams do you think are going to finish? If you had a guess right now, which five teams do you think will finish last for this season in the NFL?
Oh, man. You want Cincinnati would be one worst of them? Five. Right? Thanks for the call on it. I mean, if you're flipping the tables on me right now, asking me who's going to be the worst team in the NFL next year, that's a tough one, but I would think Carolina is going to be on that list somewhere. I still think Carolina's got a lot of holes to fill, but I mean, Carolina actually, as I think about it, I mean, Christian McCaffrey is going to make them at least somewhat competitive in games across the board. I mean, the worst team in the league, the Bengals this year, I think they get better by getting a couple of draft picks back. Not just Joe Burrow, but they get their number one last year. So they'll get short up in the offensive line and AJ Green gets better. So I don't know right now. I mean, I'm thinking positive. I'll have to look at the list and try and figure out who's really tanking it at this point. But I don't disagree with you, by the way. Chase Young is who I think is going to come out of this with the rookie of the year because he's a pass rusher that's going to go on to an offense or a defensive line that's going to be able to get after it right away. So we're going to keep taking your take. Which player drafted last night will have the biggest impact next season? Plus, what team should the Chiefs fear most in the AFC West? That's next. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN News. If you missed any of the show today, shame on you. We had some cool interviews with former Packer Mark Tauscher, Dolphins reporter Cam Wolf, or ESPN Radio's Ian Fitzsimmons. Go check it out on demand at the First Take Your Take podcast, brought to you by Capital One. With Capital One, you can open a new checkings or savings account with no fees or minimums. Welcome to banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Approval required. Capital One and a member FDIC. Now, one of the least talked about divisions in the NFL, and I don't understand why, would be the AFC West. Now, don't roll your eyes. Stop. Don't roll your eyes. I try and do a good job of at least wearing my fandom of my beloved Raiders on my sleeve. I understand that. But you're talking about the Chiefs. The Chiefs that are returning 20 out of 22 starters from a Super Bowl win, right? That Chiefs team that last night got drastically better. I think not drastically, but let's say they got much better with an incredible pick in the draft. So now you have the Chiefs. And the question is, who's there to try and contend with the Chiefs. Who should the Chiefs be worrying about? The Chargers have a great roster in my mind, top to bottom, other than a question mark at quarterback. They think they addressed that question mark last night in the draft. The Broncos believe that they got the best wide receiver in the draft when they draft Jerry Jeudy, and they think Drew Lock can be a quarterback of the future. And the Raiders continue to move forward, adding pieces in the draft last year and hopefully last night as well. So Lewis Riddick joined First Take today to talk about which team in the AFC West should worry Kansas City the most.
Yeah, I think when you're talking about the Raiders and the improvements that they've made specifically in this draft, look, Damon Arnett has to come through for them. Him and Trayvon Mullen have to be the guys on the corner that can really match up and at least keep the Chiefs from going crazy on them as far as throwing the football. And you're right, they have to slow down the passing game first and foremost, and they have to continue to have guys like Max Crosby be pass rushers that can really make life a little bit miserable at the very least for Patrick Mahomes. On the offensive side of the ball, look, Henry Ruggs, we know this. People just think Henry Ruggs might be a one-trick pony if he's just an outside blazer, a guy who's just going to take the top off the defense. Well, if you look at Alabama and look at how he was used there, he was really a catch-and-run threat. So he was a wide receiver screen threat. He was a quick slant threat. He was a double-move threat. He was a threat from out of the backfield on little swing routes and then just let him run. So John Gruden's going to have a field day with him as far as incorporating him into the offense and making him that multi-dimensional threat. Now, when you're talking about the Chargers, I mean, they're right there. The key to me with them is going to be this. Is Tyrod Taylor better than Phillip Rivers? Can Tyrod Taylor do things as far as tight window throws, as far as not turning over the football down the red area that Phillip Rivers did? If he can do that, then it's going to be a battle between those two. If he can't, then the Raiders, I think, are going to make another jump. And then the Chargers are going to be sitting there forced to have Justin Herbert come along even quicker, because that's really going to be the key. They have the defense. They have game records up front with Bosa and Ingram. They have a game record now in the middle of the field with Kenneth Murray at the second level, who they drafted out of Oklahoma, who I absolutely love. And we all know how good Derwin James is. Now you got Chris Harris on the corner as well. So they've got some playmakers on defense. And on offense, they have the wideouts. It's about the quarterback. And Max, you're right. Right now, Tyrod Taylor is going to hold the key to them taking another step. Whereas in Oakland, look, Derek Carr, he's done it. The question is, can he do it now that they've given him another weapon to go along with Josh Jacobs and Tyrell Williams?
Let's acknowledge that the last time we saw great aggressive quarterbacking from Derek Carr was when he had Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper as his two wide receivers. He now has Tyrell Williams, somebody that last year battled a lot of injuries, but the presumption is can play, and they've added Ruggs to that. So I think there's a lot of reason for the Raiders to be positive going into this, not to mention the offseason additions that they made at linebacker. I also think that there's a lot of reason for the Broncos to be positive at this point, because Jerry Jeudy is the type of weapon that's going to help you find out if Drew Lock is the answer. Both of those teams were 7-9. It's not hard to see how they get better quickly. And for the Chargers, while I don't believe in Justin Herbert, they do. And they believe in him enough to take him in that spot. Herbert will be the one question that roster needs to answer, because top to bottom, the Chargers are a great football team. It is going to be a spectacular night tonight. There is so much talent. I would implore you to watch the second round of the draft just to see where some of these huge playmakers go. There's great talent at wide receiver, at running back, great safety still on the board, and Jalen Hurts is still sitting there. One of the biggest question marks is, what are the Patriots going to do? Remember, the Packers moved up in the draft to get ahead of somebody to take Jordan Love. Was that the Patriots? The Patriots pick early in round two. We'll see what their plan is at quarterback. That's part of what makes the second and third rounds tonight particularly intriguing.